Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below.
Each person has their own individual list of skills and strengths that make them excel at one role and maybe not particularly suited for another. But it's a mix of people with varying capabilities and experiences that come together to make a great team. And if you don't know exactly who you're looking for to fill each role, how to train them effectively, and how to keep them motivated, your team isn't going to be as strong as it should be. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about how to build a top-performing inside sales team from scratch. He's founder of Bergflow, a company that specializes in human systems development and organizational design in the workplace. He works with business owners and entrepreneurs that own service-based companies to get them ready for the next level of growth. And today, he's going to share with us some of his proven systems and models for building dynamic, high-performance, pivot-ready teams. Dirk van Rienen, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Hey, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm really excited to kind of dive into it. So Dirk, before we go role by role and talk about how to build this kind of dream team, tell us a bit about your history and how you landed on building teams.
Well, I think growing up, I always loved business. And I grew up in an entrepreneurial family, so I had that blueprint of really seeing what it looks like to start businesses from scratch and build them or acquire businesses as well. So I knew I wanted to do something in business. And when I was 20 years old, I actually was able to buy my first business. And it was a ski and snowboard shop that was owner financed to me. And I dove in and I just loved that industry and started really just kind of getting my feet wet with business. But what I found out is that, you know, I went in just solely wanting to do something that I thought was going to be really fun. And working in the ski and snowboard industry, it's just an incredible industry to work in. But by the time that 2007 rolled around, my business failed. So after, and I was about 27 at the age at that time, and I found out that, you know, there's so much more that goes into really running a great business as opposed to just going in and doing something that you love doing. And after that, I, you know, just kind of really went to work, and I was working for an auctioneer at the time, and we were liquidating real estate. This is around 2007-08, and when the market crashed, so we're going around and auctioning off real estate. And in 2008, my son was born, so I told them I didn't want to travel anymore. And essentially, that started kind of a process of me building my first really professional team. And what that looked like, you know, when I was working in retail in the ski and snowboard industry, we always kind of had a great team, but, you know, selling skateboards and, you know, ski and snowboard stuff is a little bit different than selling real estate. So really kind of went into my first kind of professional team building process, and I was just failing miserably. And, you know, what ended up happening was every time I hired somebody, I wasn't able to kind of really get the full potential out of them. I wasn't able to really gel with them on our team. And the result was that I just had to work more hours. And this went on for a couple of years as we were trying to, you know, climb out of this bad situation that we're, you know, we're about $300,000 in debt at the time from the ski shop failing. So for me, it was just working and grinding as hard as I could to move things forward. And yet my life just wasn't moving forward. So I knew that something was missing. So it was probably about 2012 that I really started searching for, you know, what do really successful entrepreneurs and business owners do that I'm not doing right now? Because whatever I was doing was not working. I was working as hard as I could. And I thought, you know, hey, I think I'm a fairly intelligent guy. I'm working really hard here. I'm trying to do the right thing, but nothing's moving forward. So I knew something was flawed in my approach. And that's really when I started a journey of searching out, you know, how can I do this with people? How do I build a team? And I remember going to people and asking them, like, hey, how do you build a great team? And it was around the end of 2012 when I joined Keller Williams Realty. And one of the first classes I went to was called Recruit Select. And it was a class by Corporate Consulting, and it was all about high-performance team building. And I remember sitting in that class, there was probably about 200 people in this class, but I remember sitting in that class and just like, it was like lightning struck that day. And all of a sudden I saw the superhighway opening up in front of me because I was finally hearing and getting the information that I'd been seeking for several years. And, you know, Recruit Select just started transforming my life, and it's a three class, kind of three series course that I took 7 times in 3.5 years. So for me, I just started studying it. I started having conversations about it. I started studying human behavior. I started, you know, studying recruiting and team building and all of that. And what happens is my life just started skyrocketing over the you know, next couple of years. I went from, you know, at the beginning process of this, I was selling about 27 houses a year. Within 2 years, I was selling about 120 houses a year. I built a team that could run without me, so my real estate business was running. I went and ended up going to leadership with Keller Williams and got relocated to Houston. Did really well here, got relocated to Columbia, Maryland, and ended up running one of the top Keller Williams offices worldwide, and, you know, became one of the fastest growing real estate offices worldwide for Keller Williams. So at that point, you know, we're running a brokerage that had about 500 agents doing about $800 million a year in sales. But something was a little bit off in my life. Something was, alignment was off. So I resigned from that position and just decided, hey, I'm going to start Berkflow. And that was January of 2017. And I knew that what I'd fallen in love with was human behavior and studying team building. And, you know, so that's what we started doing as a specialty within Berkflow. Now we're 3.5 years in, and we've worked with about 180 companies now. And that's what we specialize in, is helping, you know, small businesses build really solid teams.
Amazing. What an interesting kind of path that you took to get to this point in your life.
Yeah, it is interesting, right? Because, I mean, we were chatting before this, you know, I was born and raised in South Africa. I lived there until I was 14 years old. And it truly is interesting how, you know, each person has a unique path. And that's actually one of the things that I want to talk about later when we talk about building teams, because it's important to understand that about people.
Yeah, of course. Well, let's get right into that part then. One of the main kind of parts of your philosophy on team building is to be super intentional about which people are hired for which specific role. Why do you think that is so important?
Yeah, there's several things why this is important. Number one is there's something called behavioral match. And every position that's out there, every job has an ideal behavior that is suited to do that job. And most people don't really understand how those dynamics come together. Some people kind of esoterically understand it and they kind of get it. However, there's actually a scientific process to go through to identify, for this job, what's the ideal behavior. And what happens is when you bring somebody in that's behaviorally not fit for the job, they are going to have an increased level of stress, anxiety. They're going to start experiencing fatigue. They're going to experience frustration. And all of this is actually things that they carry home with themselves every day. So that's one part of it, is the behavioral part. The next part is there's a cognitive element to every single position out there. So the research shows that, you know, a lot of people typically think, oh, just hire really smart people to do the job. Well, the research shows that you can actually hire somebody that's too smart to do the job, mm-hmm. and they're actually going to be a poor performer because they get bored really easily. Mm-hmm. And because they're bored, they get distracted. They start looking, you know, paying attention to other things. They're missing details. They're just not engaged in their work, right? So that's another part. And then, you know, the thing that's really important for us too, especially when it comes to the specific role, is making sure that whatever this role is that this human being is going to do, is that going to put them on the path of what they really want in their life? Yes. So those are kind of the elements that we look at. And we feel that when you get those things right, what happens is you get a person that's doing a job that ends up being much more fulfilled in that role. They feel like they're achieving at a higher level because they're actually behaviorally fit for it. Yes. So the cool thing is when you're really behaviorally fit for a job and you have the right cognitive match for the job is going to feel much more natural to you. It's going to be easier for you to succeed, and it's going to feel like, man, like this job was like made for me. And that's what we do, is whenever we hire, or with all the companies that we consult with and train with, when they hire and that person starts doing that job, that person should feel like, wow, it feels like this is the job I've always been looking for. And when that happens, you get higher productivity out of a person. You get longevity, right? Longer, people staying in the role longer. And today, turnover is so rampant, and it's a major expense within companies. So when you start looking at those fits, it really helps the company, but it really helps the person that you're hiring. And our belief is that when somebody comes to work for you, your job is to help them get what they want. It's not for them to come work for you so you can get what you want, right? So we really want to make sure that the people that we work with understand that, that you've got a responsibility towards that person, because again, they're going to be spending more waking hours with you than they are with their family. And after they leave work and they go home, they still need energy for their family. They need emotional capacity for their family. And that's something that's really important to us. So, those are a few things about fit that, you know, we really look at.
Awesome. So that's the kind of, those are the important pieces that go into finding the right person for a specific job. What about it, looking at it from the other side, from the kind of opposite side? Why do you think it's important to have such a wide range of behaviors or skills or capabilities when building a great team as a whole?
Yeah, well, think about, let's just use like a football team for an example, right? You've got 11 players on the field, and those 11 players are very different. Right, depending on what position they're playing, they're either going to be a little bit taller, a little bit heavier, a little bit leaner, a little bit faster, you know, whatever it is. But each person has a certain body type with abilities that fulfill that position. And when they all work together, then you get a great team. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's very natural. And we do this actually at a subconscious level, if we're not aware of it, that we tend to want to hire people that are like us. And what happens sometimes is that you start getting a team that's building, and all of a sudden you've got 7, 8, 10, 15 people that are very alike, and all of a sudden the company starts having some major gaps in it. Even within kind of divisional teams or micro teams within companies, same kind of thing. So it's really important to understand what the scope of the activities are that need to be done, mm-hmm. and then start breaking it down for like what are the ideal behaviors to do each part of this, so that when those behaviors come together, they complement each other. And that's really what a team is.
Got it. Awesome. So that's the kind of philosophy, the methodology behind the way that you build teams. So let's get into building a team. A lot of our listeners come to us for sales content. So we're kind of going to gear it towards building an inside sales team, let's say for small, medium business, but no expense spared. There's unlimited roles that you can fill in this dream team. What roles do you think you would have ideally in an inside sales team?
Okay, so Sarah, help me out here. Like, can you give me an example of like type of business or type of industry? And that way I can probably get a little bit more specific.
So let's say predictable revenue. We'll use that as an example. So services company, obviously that's your specialty. We work with companies of all sizes to grow through outbound. So we either help them build out their own internal outbound process, or we help them by actually taking on their outbound function for them. That's what we do. But then as a team, as a kind of inside sales team at Predictable Revenue, who should be on that team to go reach out to all those people? Should we have like ops people, enablement people, you know, what are all the kind of elements and personalities and whatever, who should the team be comprised of?
Yeah. Okay. So the first thing I would say is some of this is also going to depend on the culture of the company, mm-hmm. right? Because we find today that companies, the companies that are growing the fastest, right, are companies that are really starting to use a very relational way of selling. So it's not quite just the hardcore cold calling, you know, ground and pound. I'm a huge fan of that, and we do that a lot in our company. However, we, as fast as possible, want to transition somebody from really just being that cold outbound touch to be in more of a relational touch. So what that looks like is it actually is a very different behavior pattern for somebody to kind of be that person that can, you know, do a lot of the outbound calling. And what we find is typically, obviously, we want somebody that's a little bit more aggressive in that role. And we can actually behaviorally pick up, you know, the level of aggressiveness and assertiveness of a human being. And then the next thing we look at is how social that they need to be. And one thing that we typically find is for that real, that kind of ground and pound outbound cold call prospector, we typically don't want them to have, be at the higher level of sociability. And typically that's a little bit counterintuitive because you think like, oh, they need to be more social. But when we talk about sociability, we're not talking about how well somebody can talk to somebody else, right? We're not talking about their social skills. We're talking about their behavior, meaning that do they need a lot of human touch points, and do they need a lot of kind of human interaction and feedback to validate the way that they feel about things. So the higher on the sociability scale somebody is, typically the more that they need that. The lower somebody is, they're typically more introverted and they really don't need as much of that human feedback or that human, kind of feel good. They're more analytical. They're more about the facts. They're more about a linear process, right? So what we look is, when we look at sociability, we typically want somebody about in the middle. When we're looking at that, because what happens is if you get somebody that's too social, as soon as they get a bad interaction with somebody, right? Somebody just like really kind of reams them on the phone for calling them and, kind of cusses at them or whatever it is, because this kind of stuff happens when you're cold calling. It just does, right? As soon as that interaction happens, if the person's really high on the sociability scale, they're going to shut down. The next time they look at the phone and picking up the phone and making that next dial, it's going to be very heavy. So they're going to tend to want to take a minute and, gather themselves together to make that next call. As whereas somebody that's a little bit lower on the sociability, especially if there's somebody that's a little bit more driven, aggressive, and assertive, their take is going to be, man, I just got to get through these calls, right? So those are the kind of things that we start looking at when we start looking at just pure outbound is, if you got somebody that's pounding out 150, 200 phone calls a day and they're trying to have 60, 70, 80 conversations and, they're going to have some people that tell them no, they're going to have some people that, well, call me back later or I'm not interested or, hey, that sounds pretty good, whatever it is. They're going to really need the right behavioral makeup, right? And you guys have probably seen this, that when you hire somebody, even if they want to do the job and they like getting paid or they need to get paid to get their car payment made or their mortgage paid or whatever it is, to get food on the table, they're willing to do the job. But if they're not the right behavioral profile, it's going to be extremely stressful for them. Mm-hmm. And what we see is, especially like in outbound sales, And just to make sure, we are talking about outbound sales, like yes. An inside sales department that's doing outbound. Okay, cool. So in outbound sales, a lot of the companies that we start working with, when we start working with them, they usually say, man, like we just can't find people for this role. And we're just like, oh, you're probably just not finding the right profile of person. Because actually when you start finding the right profile of people, they actually, tend to kind of start getting into the work. And as they start winning, that's where they start getting more excited. And, so for that pure outbound call, that's, we're looking for somebody that's not quite as high on sociability. It's more aggressive, somebody that also operates with a sense of urgency, right? So they're going to want kind of change, variety. They're going to be a little bit more creative in the way they think. And then we also want people typically that are a little bit like bigger picture in their thinking, right? So that they don't have to be quite as linear to where, obviously if they're using a script, they can use the script, but they can also kind of step back and see what's happening in the conversation and the interaction and understand where to take it next. So that's kind of the profile that we're looking for that outbound, person.
Yeah, and prospector. Typically,
yeah, just a real prospector. So sorry, my dogs are going crazy. So that's kind of the profile. Now, if we are looking at somebody that is going to be more of a relationship builder, what we're looking for is somebody that's not quite as aggressive and driven, right? Now we can start looking for somebody that's got a little bit higher sociability, that's going to want that human interaction, that, is going to have the conversations. Yet we're not looking for people that just want to be people's friends, right? Because we still have to take somebody to a decision point and get them closed, right? But a lot of times too, that type of profile works really good on the retention side. And that's something that we've really started. When we look at growth, we look at, prospecting and we look at retention. And we've really started paying attention to retention in a really big way, because we've seen that some companies get really good at the prospecting side, at the lead generation side of getting people in, but then they start having quicker turnover. But what we've seen is companies that can retain their clients end up growing exponentially faster, because that's where you start building those raving fans, right? That's where your clients are going out and telling other people about your services. And that's something that, you know, we've really focused on in building Bergflow and a couple of other businesses that we've launched in the last several years. And then with our clients too, and to say, how can we start beating the industry averages for how long our clients do business with their clients? Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, we want to encourage, if anybody's listening, like, that's a really big thing to pay attention to, is your client retention. And that's going to come from your client onboarding. So I would look at growth in that way too. You know, what are the right behavioral profiles for the people that are going to just love on our people and support them and have them have great experiences? And then what's that profile of that person that's going out there and just hunting every day?
Amazing. So the retention is kind of like the account manager, the customer success person, somebody like that. And then of course, that first person, that outbound prospector, is like your traditional SDR. Let's talk about the closing personality. Who should be, if we're talking about one of these kind of the SaaS model for outbound sales, where you've got the prospector who hands off to that closer, who is the right closer in terms of this personality profile?
Yeah, great question. So I think some of it's going to depend on who the client is and, you know, who you're dealing with there. Because I think it's smart to understand, you know, kind of who you're dealing with. Obviously, if you're doing lower ticket, higher volume type stuff, then you're probably going to have a little bit more of kind of a generic type closer. What I mean generic is that they're more suited just for the role. They're not matched to the client. If you're doing much less transactions, much higher ticket volume transactions, then you're probably going to want to be a little bit more specific about what type of, you know, behavioral person, what type of, and I keep going back to behavior, because we don't really talk about personality much. We really talk about behavior. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that personality is a derivative of behavior. So when we can look at behavior, we're looking at somebody's innate hardwiring. And from that point, that's kind of how we make decisions. So, but again, it's going to be somebody that the people that I think make the best closers are people that truly understand how to ask questions, and people that understand how to lead somebody else through asking questions. So I think that sometimes if you get somebody that's too driven, that's too impatient, they're just going to want to close the deal to go to the next deal. That's why typically that type of profile is not really good for retention, because they just kind of want to get it done and go to the next one, right? They need that variety, that speed, that change. So typically what we're going to look for is to bring the assertiveness down just a little bit. But what we're looking for at the ideally is higher emotional intelligence. And, you know, when it comes to closing, that what we started seeing is the people that have higher emotional intelligence are better problem solvers and closers when it comes to dealing with human beings, right? So it's going to be somebody that needs to understand, one, how to ask really great questions, and how to understand that the whole process of closing is just helping somebody recognize that, hey, this is something that can help them, right? Mm-hmm. So and I think people are a lot smarter today, right? I think people are a lot more tuned into being taken advantage of or being, you know, fed BS. So I think that the more authentic that person can be, the more, you know, emotional intelligence they can display. And again, that they're not just really getting aggressive, that they can lead somebody to a decision, you know, that's who you're looking for. But the thing that you also got to watch out for is not to have the person that's on the phone that becomes friends with them.
Right.
And, you know, one thing that I learned about selling real estate was, you know, after we walked to the house and talked about the client's needs and, you know, started talking about the details, when it came time to sign the contract, like, just push the contract over and let them sign the contract. And, you know, it seems so simple, but so many people at that point, they keep talking and they say something else and say something else. And the next thing, you know, the client's going to say, or the prospect's going to say, you know what, let's think about it.
Yeah.
You know, so it is a thing that you got to know when to stop talking and just ask the questions.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Okay, the final kind of person that I'm thinking of and want your opinion on is the sales manager. So somebody that's going to oversee all of these different roles and have whatever kind of behaviors needed to manage each of them well, motivate each of them well, kind of train them, coach them. How would you profile the behavior for that person?
Yeah. So one thing that I'm looking for in a sales manager, because I was actually talking to a client this morning, and they're building their sales team out, and they kind of have something blow up over the weekend. And, you know, we were kind of talking through this, and, you know, we were talking specifically about their leader, and the challenge is that many times salespeople are challenging to manage, right? So, and they've got somebody on their team that's extremely aggressive, that's clashing with a manager that's not quite as aggressive, right? So I think that when I'm looking for somebody that's going to be leading a team, obviously there is an element of the behavior that's really important. And again, here we want somebody that's not going to be too social, that's going to have a little bit more drive, a little bit more assertiveness. But what we really are looking for here is somebody that understands how to practice care and candor. And that's going to be really important, because sometimes you're going to need to put your arm around that salesperson and just love on them because they had a really tough day, they're not meeting their quota, something crazy is going on at home, whatever it is. And sometimes you're going to have to drop the hammer on that person, and you're really going to have to come down on them hard with accountability. The important thing is to know when to do which one, because if you do the wrong one at the wrong time, you're going to burn somebody out. You're actually going to demotivate somebody. So I think when we're looking for somebody that's a great sales manager, is they really understand, you know, how to take care of their people, how to you know, be tough on their people, but do it in a way that their people respects them for it. I think so many times sales managers want to kind of crack the whip, and they want to come down hard on their people, and they think it's all about just like beating people up. And people don't want that anymore today. They don't want to go to work somewhere where they're going to get beat up. They want to go to work somewhere where they feel like, wow, this person actually cares about me and what I want to be able to accomplish for my family. Because again, that salesperson is there to, yes, help the company, and they're there because they believe there's an opportunity that if they're going to sell the service or the product, they're going to be making money, and that's how they get on their path to getting what they want. So I think a great manager understands that dynamic and really gets to know their people on an individual basis, behaviorally, and also, you know, what their past track record was, what they really want, and leads them from that place. But I think a great manager, you know, understands the difference between, you know, again, loving on people and what the bottom line is for the company, and bringing those things together and involving the salespeople in the goal, right? So one thing I've always thought was really important was that the people involved in the goal have to be involved in setting the goal, right? If they're part of doing the activity, they have to be part of setting the goal. They have to be part of, you know, creating the vision for that division of the company that's going to be driving the growth and the sales and everything else. And you know, that's kind of what we're looking for in managers, somebody that's willing to let their ego down enough to allow other people into the decision-making and building a collaborative type sales team.
Got it. Okay, awesome. So the four kind of roles that go into this inside sales team that we're building right now is that SDR, that retention person, so customer success account manager, the AE or the closer, and then the sales manager, who of course brings it all together. Is there anyone that you think I'm missing if you were kind of building the ideal team here?
No, I think that's, you know, again, I mean, it just depends on what the dynamic of the business is, right? And, you know, how people kind of go through that pipeline. Because a lot of times what you could have is you could have an inside salesperson that, you know, also is the closer, right? That you don't have to have a specific closer. But, you know, typically what we see is in some of the business we go with that more that aggressive type person is typically going to be the closer. You know, and then the people that are a little bit more relational, you know, they can maybe nurture the leads, or very quickly, if that more aggressive person realizes that they're talking to somebody that's way more analytical, way more, you know, just kind of linear in their thinking, maybe more social, they don't want that hard close, then they maybe could, hey, I want to introduce you to so-and-so, and they can really, I think, help you a little bit too. So I think it's all about the team understanding the dynamic of who they are and then who they're working with. But I think that you got it nailed on the team.
Okay, great. So then let's talk about, now that we've kind of mapped out this dream team, we know the behaviors we're looking for each role, in the actual hiring process, how do you kind of pull out these behaviors in somebody that you're interviewing so that you can actually, you know, tell if they're a behavioral fit for their role?
Yeah, so the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to look at each role specifically and individually and look at, before we even start talking to people, we want to define, okay, what is the ideal behavior that we're looking for? What is really the cognitive match what we're looking for? And what's the emotional intelligence match that we're looking for? So in Berkflow, we tend to take that three-dimensional look at somebody, and we know that up front. So when we start the process with somebody, right from the start, we're actually doing all those assessments. And we, what we've been training our clients to do is to build a larger, what we call talent acquisition pipeline. So that if you're going to want to grow a service-based company fast, one of the most crucial things is you're going to have to build a talent acquisition pipeline for bringing people in. A lot of our clients today are actually growing faster than their ability to hire and train people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what we're doing is helping them build a bigger pipeline so that that's not the bottleneck for their business. Now, after we do the assessments, our system is going to tell us, okay, is this a green fit, kind of a yellow fit, you know, talk to them, but be cautious, or a red fit, like, hey, this is not going to work out. So when we start kind of getting all the greens in and we start sitting down with them, then the real work starts. And what we do is our hiring process is lengthy. It's most people that look at it are going to say, that's way too long. I'm never going to spend that much time with somebody before I hire them. And then we just kind of chuckle and we say, okay, well, it's evident you don't understand the cost of a bad hire. And most company owners do not understand how expensive it is every time they hire somebody and it's not the right fit. They typically look at the money that they pay them, and yet that is a fraction of the overall cost of a bad hire. So once somebody kind of internalizes, wow, it's really important that I hire the right people, then we get them to slow down on the front end. So once we've done the assessments with them, we're going to start a process. And this is a process that we delivered with designed within Pivot Ready Teams. And what we start with is just a quick pre-screen. And this is usually, we stack pre-screens up and we're going to do maybe 6 to 8 of them within about a 2-hour period. And literally these are, you know, 10, 15 minutes, quick back-to-back. We use Zoom and waiting rooms for this quick little, you know, interactions. From there, we kind of take the candidates we like, and we go to a screening interview. And that's typically going to be about an hour. And what we're talking about is we use the WAY method, where we talk about work, education, interest, and goals. And we really start finding out, okay, you know, where are they at on that, right? So at that point, we started kind of understanding, okay, a little bit about who is this person, what are they interested in, you know, what's important about their future. And, you know, when the behaviors match and they've come to that point, then we're like, okay, hey, we want to take them into what we call our deep dive, where we're going to start going really deep with people. And the last thing we do before that is we do a social media scrub. So we're going to check, you know, all the social channels on them. And also we reference check them. So we give them references, start reference checking them. But when we go into the deep dive, there's three unique steps that we do. And I think, like, if more companies would do this, they're going to start seeing a different culture emerge than their organizations. But the first thing that we do is we get their life trajectory. And we have a conversation with somebody and we would say, hey, Sarah, let's go way back. Let's go back to maybe you're 5, 6 years old. You know, what do you remember about your childhood? You know, what was great about your childhood? You know, tell us about the community you grew up in. And we start learning what this person went through within those years where, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8. Then we kind of jump over to kind of, hey, let's talk about those junior high type years, right? You know, let's talk about when you were, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old, what was life like, what happened, you know, and then we kind of pace kind of through those high school years. And from there, you know, hey, did somebody go to university? Did they not go to university? Did they take their first job? And we literally just sit there. And I mean, this exercise could take 90 minutes to 2.5 hours, where somebody is, you know, just walking us through their life story. And by the time that we get done, we've asked them a ton of questions, because the rule is, for the person having the interview with them, it's very conversational, but the rule is that you don't actually get to add comments. You just ask questions. So the one person's asking questions, the candidate, you know, is talking for 2 hours and time flies by for them because they're talking about themselves. But what happens is it starts giving us a track record of emergence. And we start seeing, okay, hey, has this person really started elevating their position in life? When they started this position, what were they doing? By the time that they left that company, where were they? What did they get accomplished? You know, who were their inspirations at that company, right? Who was there anybody there they had conflict with? I mean, we're just asking so many questions that it gives us a real insight into who this person is. And one thing that we've learned is that if you want to build a growing company, you have to have growth-minded people that have a track record of emergence. And so when we look at that and we see that, oh, somebody joined a company and they kind of had some time, they were there 2 or 3 years, they went to a different company, they were there 2 or 3 years, but we can't really see that they actually elevated within that company, then it shows a flat line of trajectory. And we don't hire people with flat lines of trajectory, and we recommend to our clients they never do that either, because we say, look, if this person's been flat, 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 and you hire them, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. They're going to be flat. Because typically people, it's kind of like a zebra doesn't change its stripes, right? And surely there's going to be that unicorn person that they've kind of been one way with 4 other businesses, and they get to your business and they're going to become a rock star. But unfortunately, we can't bet on that happening. So what we do is we really go deep and find out, okay, what that track record was. After that interview, we get ready for the next interview where we actually go through thought process. And we ask a lot of questions, and the behavioral assessment that we do actually helps us define how to ask the questions and which questions to ask based on their behavior. So these questions are almost tailored for the individual. And we really start getting a sense of, okay, how do they think? How do they process information? How do they make decisions? And again, this interview is usually about a 90-minute interview. And then the final deep interview that we do is called the future pacing interview, where we take somebody and we spend 2 hours talking about, you know, what they really see happening in their life in the next 5 years. And we go really deep on it. So if somebody says, oh, well, I want to take my family on a vacation. Perfect. Like, where'd you go on the vacation? Where would you want to take them? What do you do? What did it look like? You know, I mean, we really kind of put it in a way that we get inside their head and really see what they want. And when all of that is over, then we've got enough evidence to start making a decision of understanding, one, is somebody, you know, obviously, if we've gone through the assessments, they're behaviorally a fit for their role, they're cognitively a fit for the role, they've got the right level of emotional intelligence for the role. Now, through all the questions we've asked, we've gotten a good sense of who they are. Are they growth-minded? What are their values? Will they be a fit with the culture, with the team that they're going to be working on, with the organization as a whole? And we've got enough evidence from all the questions that we've asked to understand, are they going to be able to do this job? And that doesn't mean that we have to hire somebody that has the skills already to do the job. We hire people actually a lot that don't have the skills already, but they're the right fit in every other way, and then we can teach them the skills. So that's kind of in a nut box, like, you know, what our hiring process is. We've got a few other steps after that where we do a team interview and things like that to make sure they gel, but it's a lot longer process than most people use, and we're seeing that the people that will slow down enough and do this process in the front end are finding better candidates. They're building better relationships with their candidates before day one in the work of them showing up for work. And when they show up for day one and this person has gone through spending so much time with them, they show up more motivated, more eager to help the company win than ever before, because they believe that they're working for a company that cares about them and knows what they want and then wants to help them win. So typically onboarding and training go much better when you slow down on the hiring side.
Awesome. Yeah, totally makes sense. And it's, you kind of know your team already and you know your senior leadership already before you even come in for work on that first day, if you spent that time with them. So yeah, makes sense that it would be kind of a quicker start. You kind of hit the ground running rather than coming in and having to spend the first couple of days like getting to know everybody and figuring out and finding your footing. It makes sense that it kind of accelerates that process. Of course, you're taking a little bit of extra time on the front end, but as you said, the cost of a bad hire is absolutely monumental. So rather put that work in before you make that mistake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. So you've got this person hired, they're the behavioral fit, the cognitive fit, right level of emotional intelligence. How, once they're kind of going in their role, how do you keep people motivated?
Yeah, great question. So I think one thing I just want to slow down on real quick and touch on, and this is something, again, that over the last 3 years we've realized is incredibly important, is that most people, when somebody shows up for day one on the job, most people want to start training. And we've realized that there's actually something between day one on the job showing up and training, and that's called onboarding. And I just want to encourage any listeners that are hiring people to start thinking about creating an amazing onboarding experience for that new person that's joining the company. And really, maybe just, even if it's as short as 10 days, but really, how do you get them acclimated into who the company is, what the mission, vision, value of the company is, values of the company are, and really how letting them understand how to win within the organization, right? Not just by doing their job, but teaching them right from the start, what does it mean to be a great team player? What is the culture here? How do we make decisions? You know, who do you go to for, you know, different things that you need? I mean, really helping the person get acclimated to the organization, get onboarded, and then start their training. So I think that that's really important. Now, obviously, somebody goes through their training, they start performing in the role. The question is, okay, how do we keep somebody motivated and inspired? And this is why we do the deep work up front before we hire somebody, because we actually record and document everything when we're going through this process. So on their whole, you know, kind of getting their past trajectory, their life story, getting their future pacing exercise, we record all of that. And what happens is when we start seeing performance drop, we will call them back in and saying, you know, hey, Sarah, here's the thing. I want to find out. Let's look at this piece of paper. This is when we hired you. You told me that these are all the things that are really important to you and your family, you know, for the next 5 years, right? And based on all of this, you know, we put you on a comp plan, we put you on a training plan to be able to get all of this. Now, I'm concerned because I feel like you're not performing in accordance to be able to reach these goals that you set for yourself, right? Has something changed here, right? And we take it back to what they want, right? Because again, they don't really care. Like, yes, they do in a certain sense, but they don't really care just what the company wants, right? They care what the company wants when they believe the company cares about them and what they want. Like, that's what truly causes buy-in, is somebody that works at a company, they believe, like, this company is doing something worthwhile. This company cares about me, cares about my family, and, you know, has my best interest at heart. So we always want to take it back to them. And that's where the conversation starts, right? It's not about like, hey, you're just not meeting your numbers. You're not, you know, it's not beating somebody up. And traditionally, like, sales is very much like that. But what I experienced before when I was running these really big sales organizations was like incredible, like turn and burn. It's like, look, we can recruit at a really astronomical rate, but I mean, it's like the back door was open and there was just constant churning. So I knew, look, we gotta find a much better way to do things. We can't churn like that. And that's where it really came down to the individual and just really finding out like, hey, what's going on? And one thing too that I learned is I used to want to avoid any type of drama in the workplace. So like if somebody had something going on at home, like I was like, I don't care. Like just when you come in here, just do your work, right? Just focus, do your work. You know, when you go home, deal with that. And what happened is when that was my attitude, we constantly had drama at work. And, you know, over the last 5-6 years, my viewpoint has completely changed on that, where today I love talking to my people about, you know, hey, what's going on at home? How's your family doing? What's going on with your health? And even the ones that allow me, you know, I help them build wealth, right? So, you know, I'm like, hey, how much money did you save this month? Like, what are you investing in? You know, hey, are you putting away for that vacation that you want to go to? So, you know, it's a very personalized conversation. And what I've learned is that when we are able to have those conversations, there's almost no drama in the workplace anymore. But I think like that's what is more motivating and inspiring to people is when they see that they are moving their lives forward, because there's nothing worse than somebody working hard and they can't see an end result of things getting better, right? That crushes hope. That's why people leave companies. Is there's actually like the number one reason for the last 7 years consecutively that people leave companies is a lack of career development. They don't see that there's future opportunity for the company that they're working with. And same thing in sales. Like if you're out there doing a sales job and you may be making a little bit more money, but at a certain point, it's not just about the money anymore, right? It's like, hey, it's about the fulfillment of what you're doing. It's the advancement of becoming a leader. It's, you know, opportunities for you to start something else, you know, build a team, whatever it is. And when there's not that conversation happening between, you know, the direct report and their leader on a regular basis, then we see that motivation, inspiration, you know, really tend to leave very quickly, and it just becomes mundane and about hitting the numbers and doing the job, right? So we really try to stay away from that. I mean, obviously, yes, we still have to have our numbers, our accountability conversations, and those conversations are always tied to the individual and what's important to them.
Makes sense. There's something that you mentioned a little bit earlier that I want to touch on again, and it was you mentioned this pivot ready team, and we mentioned it in your intro as well. One of your kind of focuses in building these great teams is that they're pivot ready. What do you mean by pivot ready?
Yeah, so in 2016, I read an article that was published by Yale, and it was about the speed of business. And the article was talking about that the speed of business would actually become the greatest disruption within business. And as I started thinking about that, I started studying that a little bit. And, you know, it was just kind of always in the back of my mind. And, you know, by 2017, I really started kind of going deeper in, okay, what does this mean? And started studying, you know, technological trends of how fast technology is evolving and changing, you know, how fast processing power, how fast, you know, AI and all of these things are developing. And what's happened is the rate of change, as of 2016, the rate of change has actually surpassed the human adaptability to change. So mm-hmm. Think about it. Since the start of time, man has always, their ability to adapt to change has always outpaced the rate of change until about 2016. So most people sense that something's different in the world today. And not just since like COVID, but even before that, like something's uneasy. And that's exactly what it is. So we realized we have to start building a different type of team. Building more teams that are like more static based won't survive in the future. So we said, we got to build pivot ready teams. And we started working on this program about 3 years ago. And we launched it earlier this year. And the whole dynamic here is that you have a team that from the start is engineered to pivot. A team that's always change ready. And the reason that that's important is because things will only, the rate of change is only accelerating. Right, with COVID happening, what's happened is there's been an accelerator that's been kicked into action that people, we don't even know what's going to come from that yet. Right, the working from home, virtual work, the, you know, putting into, you know, more technology coming into the workplace, it's going to accelerate change at a higher rate. And what we're seeing today, especially with service-based companies, the companies that are able to adapt and change the fastest are the ones that are actually winning. It's not, in this article that I read, it was kind of a little bit mind-blowing because this was in 2016. The article said, it's no longer about the company that's got the best product or service. It's about the company that can go to market the fastest and change. And that's kind of a bold statement. And especially some companies find that highly offensive, right? Because they're like, well, we've got the best service and we got the best product. But the truth is, if you study companies, there's a ton of companies, and Sarah, you probably see this a lot, where there's companies that they've got an incredible service or they got an incredible product, and yet their competitor has like half the product or service they do, but it's just like massively outpacing them in the marketplace. And, you know, we are always advocates of having a great service and product, and, you know, we realize that you have to be a change-ready organization. Like companies that are like digging in their heels, and typically that comes from the people, right? The people dig in their heels and fight change. And any owner that's listening to this right now can relate to trying to make changes and then your people start fighting you for it. And that's hard. So what we do is we go into companies and help them redesign and re-engineer. And usually we're able to do it without them having to like fire their team and stuff like that, because it's not about getting rid of people. It's about positioning people correctly, having the right conversations, and getting the right mindset established within people that they have to build pivot-ready teams. But at the essence, it's just a team that collaborates at a really high level, communicates at a really high level, and they can execute together at a high level. And the result is whenever a change happens in the marketplace, whether it's individual to an industry or maybe a really big change like COVID that affects all of us, the companies that can take the hit, pivot, re-engage, and move forward the fastest are the ones that will dominate in the future. And that's what we've built, is to help companies do that.
Totally makes sense. That's kind of one of the key skills that makes a great outbound team or a great individual doing outbound is this agility, the ability to kind of pivot even just in the kind of day-to-day, as you're mentioning, kind of having the ability to understand what somebody, what a prospect is saying to you and then pivot the conversation, or kind of looking at in the macro as the whole team being able to pivot to a change they see in the market. Totally makes sense. And I think that's a great kind of segue to bringing us home with our last question here. Let's say there's someone listening right now who's a founder, CEO, sales leader who doesn't have the budget to build that whole dream team, but they want to make one sales hire. Who is the first hire? Who is this person that you should bring on to kind of start your sales if you don't have the chance to have this you know, prospector, closer, retention, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, I think one thing that I think is really important for people to realize is that if you really are smart about the way that you build your business, it's like, look, this first person that you're going to hire to drive growth for you, think of this person as you're wanting to hire this person that can hire the next person and train the next person. And I think like that's the first thing when you're making that first hire on a growth side that you got to think about. So many times I see companies that go in and they say, well, I'm just going to get somebody in here to kind of help us get moving. And then what happens is they don't quite do the job right. They're not working out real well. You end up hiring somebody else. You know, maybe they're not that great. You end up hiring somebody else. Now you got three or four people that are mediocre and they're not really getting stuff done. And it's hurting the company. Plus now you've got additional expenses. So if you really think about this, think of this as a great opportunity. Right, it's not a position that you're hiring for the company. It's an amazing opportunity for somebody that's out there. And once you build a profile, you got to start looking at, I want to find somebody that can grab onto this opportunity, and this could be a game changer for them and their family. And when you look at it like that, what you're going to start seeing is that your lens changes in who you want to bring into the organization. So if I was going to bring that first person in, I would probably look for somebody that has a little bit of upward trajectory. You know, somebody that, you know, and that could be as simple as like somebody that started off as a dishwasher at a restaurant that, you know, maybe became a waiter, that became, you know, the head shift waiter, that became, you know, the bartender running the bar and then managing the whole restaurant, right? But now they're still working for a small restaurant and there's no upward trajectory. So, you know, those kind of people are amazing. Or, you know, one company that we used to actually hire from a lot was Enterprise Rent-A-Car. You know, and for anybody that's running sales teams out there, like I would say, like, go recruit from Enterprise Rent-A-Car, right? And the reason I say that is because they actually have an incredible training program. And if you can find somebody that started off at the ground level that went to like the store manager position in about 3 years, that shows really rapid upward trajectory. But the challenge is, then they kind of get stuck at the store level where they don't have that area level. So a lot of people are kind of stuck there, right? So same kind of thing. I would go look for somebody that's had a lot of rapid upward trajectory that's now kind of capped in the position they are. And I would bring them in and say, look, share your vision with them, right? Make sure that they're part of this. They see this as their opportunity to go do something amazing. And then your job as the leader is just to support them and what they're going to be doing. Right. And that is a much smarter way to do this, because then that person takes the responsibility of hiring and training the next person. Like, they truly own those KPIs, right? They're going to do what's needed versus, you know, just going out there and just hiring somebody to, you know, go pound the phones for you that's not really bought into the opportunity. And I mean, that's the first thing that I would say is, you know, find that. Like, the next thing is that you got to find somebody that's growth minded. And if they're going to be running a growth division, right? They, if they're going to be out there and they're going to be doing these activities, find somebody that's driven, that's hungry, that's humble, that's, you know, that wants to go out there and accomplish something. And that's where, like in that long interview process that I was talking about, you're going to uncover everything that you need to know to make the right decision. But I would go find somebody that's looking for an opportunity and match them up with a great opportunity and let them start running with it. Obviously, you're still going to be meeting with them, overseeing them, holding them accountable. And if they're the right hire, then you've made one hire that you can grow with, and they start making the other hires.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Dirk. This has been incredibly informative. I'm sure all those sales leaders and company owners, founders out there that are listening right now, trying to build a team for the first time or a high performing team, they kind of have some great strategies here to put into practice when looking for their own pivot ready sales team that kind of fits all the behavioral needs that they have. We talked about what different roles kind of build up this ideal inside sales team and what behaviors fit best for each of those roles, from the prospector to that retention person, to the closer, to the manager, how to kind of find those people, how to onboard them, and how to keep them. If someone wants to learn more about your process or more about you, where can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, just at our website, bergflow.com, B-E-R-G-F-L-O-W. And that's the best place to just kind of check out who we are and what we do.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much again, Dirk, for coming on the Predictable Revenue Podcast. And thank you guys for listening.